Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Sliding in now, as he has every Tuesday all football season long, he's Charles Davis at CFD22 on Twitter. And Charles, you finished off the NFL season calling the game between the Packers and the Lions. And I think the Packers are one of the most enigmatic teams out there right now. Yes, they're the number two overall seed. Yes, they got a bye week. But I'm not really sold on them. They were down 17-3 at the half. I watched a lot of your game. What do you think? I mean, it's rare to say, hey, do you believe in this team when they're one of the four best in the NFL in the regular season? But I don't know that I do.
And they know it. I think a good majority of us probably feel exactly as you do, Clay. And they put it out there to make us feel that way. You know, they don't blow very many people out, right, when they play that way. They struggle against teams that you would think that they would jump on. But they do raise their game against the better teams that they've played for the most part, as long as they stay out of the state of California.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chargers game, that one we'll never understand because, you know, that Chargers team, as it turned out, that was very average. The 49ers, you can understand a little bit more, but you would have thought it would have been a more competitive game. They got crushed in that one. And in this one, they were sleepwalking, and I don't understand. They knew what they were playing for. They knew that what was out there. And then they finally got right. So bottom line is the team has changed in how they do things on offense. You know, it doesn't all run through Aaron, although I do believe that to get deep in the playoffs, there will have to be at least one game, Clay, where he'll have to be the Aaron Rodgers of old, and everyone else will have to come up to their to that level in terms of, you know, they're going to have to throw the ball. Now, they'll try and run it like crazy, but I do think at least one of the games in the playoffs, if they continue to advance, he will have to be that Aaron Rodgers that we're used to seeing. I think someone's going to force that hand, and he'll be up to it, I believe, even though he wasn't on Sunday. He was off on Sunday. But I think he will be down the road.
He was really off on Sunday, and you had a better view than I did. And for people out there who don't know what I mean by that, when you sit up top, you can see the field a lot better than you can on television. But even on television, I thought there were at least three or four should-have-been touchdown passes that Aaron Rodgers ordinarily makes that the Lions left on the field, and he missed them. What do you attribute that to?
I don't know. I really don't, because I think earlier in the year we could have very easily said, well, still learning some of these receivers, maybe not quite right here, maybe not quite. There was none of that, I don't think, on Sunday. I just think he was off. I really do. I just think that he missed it. And one thing that we've seen from Aaron over the years is his ability – to throw from any arm angle without any of what you would call proper footwork, right? How many times have you seen that clever? You're like, oh, my God, how did he make that throw?
Yeah.
Well, he still tries those throws, and he will continue to attempt those throws, and I think that he will continue to be mostly successful with them, but some of them just didn't happen on Sunday. And then that one to Aaron Jones in the corner of the end zone when he got out of the pocket – and he ended up throwing it with a little zip on it instead of a little bit of a float. He just missed that one too. So that happened a bunch, and timing was off a little bit by like one step. So remember those sideline throws?
Yeah.
Guys were over the sideline when normally they would come down and have a chance to get their feet down. I don't know how much of that was receivers, how much of that was Aaron, but the combination just wasn't good. But bottom line, Clay, second half they did something Aaron talks about all the time. This is one of his favorite quotes. A lot of times the simpler plays are the best plays. And in the second half, the simpler throws were the best throws. They cut out all the deep shots, and they started throwing the checkdowns and then the shorter, you know, three-step drop throws, and the rhythm started to get there a little bit better.
All right, let's talk about some of these wild card matchups. And I want to start with the team that you called the preseason games for. Titans are going on the road against the Patriots.
Yeah.
If I had told you back when you were doing preseason games, oh, by the way, this offense for the Titans is going to have the highest-rated passer in the NFL and also the leading rushing yardage guy, Would you have believed that was possible for the offense? That ended up being true of Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. And would you have ever believed it would be with the backup quarterback?
Yes, on the rushing, because that's what I thought they were built to do and how they would play to their personality. That didn't surprise me if Henry was going to be healthy. And remember, he came out of preseason with no carries, not because they were resting him, but because he wasn't healthy. But yes, because that's their identity. No on Tannehill. Strong no on that one. And not because I just didn't think Tannehill could play. I just didn't think it was possible that a quarterback there would have that type of a rating and would play to that level. Now, is the offense built for you to do that? Yes. But you just don't see it. I was just more concerned coming out of preseason whether or not they could actually get Marcus Mariota going. And if so, I thought he could rise up to a pretty good level because of his talent. But once we all realized it wasn't happening this year, I didn't think Tannehill would jump into the level that he has. So no on, yes on the rushing, no on Tannehill.
What do you expect to see from the Titans going on the road against the Patriots? How vulnerable are the Patriots to this type of team like the Titans have?
Well, the Patriots are similar to what we just talked about with the Packers in that we've watched them all year. And even when they were undefeated and throttling people on defense, we were concerned about their offense, right? So Green Bay's defense rose up and played better this year, although not at the level we saw early of New England. That was at a historic level. But New England has such a better track record with all the Super Bowl wins that we would give them more of a pass and be probably harder on a Green Bay. I think we're at the stage now with New England where we will continue to give them more of a pass because of the past. But at the same time, maybe you cast in a harder eye, like, I don't know about this team. I do think that Tennessee's got to stay true to who they are, and Derrick Henry's going to have to be prepared to carry it 30 times in the game. I don't think you want to get into a wild, we're going to throw it around type of a deal, and New England typically doesn't let you do that. But they're going to have to be prepared for a big stack at the defensive front because they know Henry's coming. They're going to want to take that away, which is what they always do. So A.J. Brown and crew, be prepared because this is going to be your time. And if Tannehill's going to get it done, have to play the level that we've seen, you know, throughout his time there at Tennessee.
How do you assess Tannehill? Because a lot of times when you have young guys coming into the playoffs, and Jimmy G, for example, is in, and Lamar Jackson both, I mean, have never won playoff games, but they're still such super young guys, the number one seeds in the NFC and the AFC, that I think it's hard to really assess those guys. Tannehill's not young. He's 31, but he's never played in a postseason game before. Lots of times, guys who have never played in the postseason before don't do very good early in their career. How do you assess Tannehill given his age? Does that change your expectations for what he's capable of in the postseason?
I think age and background makes it more likely for him to play at the level we've seen in the season or be prepared to go through the bumps early and find his way out of them. And I mean it but like this, Clay. At Texas A&M, he was quote-unquote doubted, remember? He had to play receivers first couple of seasons, and they started another quarterback who played okay for them, but never made in the NFL. And, you know, I'm sure Ryan Tannehill at home says, yeah, whatever happened to him, they played him over me, and here we are. Then he got his opportunity, doubted with where he was picked in the draft, because I wouldn't have taken him that high, but he did. And then the Dolphins thing pseudo worked out, but not fully. And while he hasn't been in the playoffs, because remember, he was hurt when Matt Moore took him, you know, finished that thing off. I just think he's had enough bumps along the way that he'll have enough of a chip without turning it into a boulder on his shoulder that he'll be fine.
Who do you think is the best team in the NFC? So we talked about the Patriots game and the uncertainty there. We talked about the Packers and the uncertainty there. To me, the two best teams in the NFC are the 49ers and the Saints. And they had that epic game that I believe you called between the 49ers and the Saints. You've seen a lot of these teams up close. Who's the best?
I think the 49ers are because they're getting the open week now. I think if the 49ers weren't getting the open week, we would look back at their schedule and how things finished down the stretch and go, that's probably what got them more than anything. They played so many difficult games, so many difficult teams, so many marquee games that in a team that's finally getting there and getting over the hump, I think that's a lot to ask mentally. But I think getting this open week will be huge for them, being the number one seed, having everyone come to them. I think that's a big deal. So, yes, I think that they're the best right now. New Orleans is as good as they are. Yeah, it was 48-46. But if that game's going to take place again in San Francisco as opposed to in New Orleans, I like San Francisco, although for Drew Brees, he couldn't ask for a better assignment. Better for him to go there than to go to Green Bay. Because I just think that Drew, this stage of his career, that dome is huge for him. Good weather is huge for him, as opposed to going and playing in those bad, bad conditions that you know you're going to get in Green Bay. And I'm, you know, you look at the schedule already for TV, Clay. Green Bay gets the late game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, my God, really? And the beauty of TV is you'll get no complaints out of people in Green Bay about playing a night game in January. And you and I know, well, I should say you, I shouldn't put words in your mouth, but I can tell you right now, you couldn't get me out there unless I was getting paid.
Oh, no, 100%. I'm not going
no
out
chance.
There. I don't do cold weather. Seahawks, ooh. You've also seen the Seahawks and the Eagles. I believe you called at least one of both of their games. It's a rematch of a game that took place, I believe it was in week 12.
Yeah, who do you make that game too.
You had that game too. So you're basically the expert on all these wild card weekends. Who do you like in the Seahawks-Eagles game?
Well, I like the Seahawks close, but it wouldn't shock me at all that it becomes a major grind for them for this reason. That was an absolute, you know, I hate to use the term, and people may ding me for it, and I apologize. But you and I know that in football terms, that was a war on Sunday night.
Yeah.
Okay, those guys really got after each other. A lot of emotion, a lot of contact. Now you're flying across country again. Now Seattle handles that very well. Their track record speaks for itself. But still, you're flying cross country, and you got to take on an Eagles team that's actually riding an unbelievable high. And are they not playing with house money at this point, Clay? They are. They were playing with house. No one expected them to be here. They're playing with almost no one on the roster that we recognize on offense, especially the skill positions. Brandon Brooks just got hurt at right guard. They're playing with house money. They'll play loose. They'll play free. And Carson Wentz, for all the criticism people have levied on him, has he not played his best football over the last month? And that's without Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, Nelson Aguilar, and in his last game, Zach Ertz. I think that people have to start looking at that and saying, you know something? That's a tough, gritty kid from North Dakota who raised his game and carried his team when he needed to. So if I'm Seattle, I'm really nervous about this type of a game.
Do you think we had a poll question up. I think 35,000 people voted in it yesterday. And the question was, should the NFC and the AFC take the top four records or the top four division winners for home field? Does it feel right to you? You called that game earlier. The Seahawks already went on the road and beat the Eagles. They finished two games better overall record.
Yeah.
That they have to travel and play in the road for this game?
It never feels right, Clay. It always feels wrong that a team has a better record. It goes on the road. But I'm about to contradict myself because I'm not going to lie. I actually enjoy watching the challenge of some of these. Look, we would never have that beast mode game, that beast quake game, if we hadn't had that type of a deal. You know, remember, they were 7-9. Won their division, hosted New Orleans, had won the Super Bowl the year before, and got New Orleans and beat them. We've seen Carolina, what were they, 7-8-1 one year?
Yep.
Hosted home. It never feels right, and I really don't have the best case in the world. So if I'm sitting in a court of law, and you know, that's your bailiwick, you would destroy me on stand in no time. You wouldn't even need a cross. But at the same time, I kind of like it. I'm not going to lie. I kind of like winning your division, get you a home game, and off you go.
All right, the other two wild card games, curious what you think about them. The Texans hosting the Bills in the other AFC side of this situation. And then you've got the Saints, who we talked about the fact that you've seen them, and I think you've seen the Vikings a decent amount too.
Yeah.
How do you see those two matchups going?
Well, Texans-Bills, you know, that playoff game is better known as the Houston Invitational now.
Yeah.
Because that's their game. They're always going to play that first playoff game at home at that time frame, the whole deal. You get J.J. Watt back, that's wonderful. Just don't do what you've done in the past, which decide to put J.J. Watt at tailback in a goal line situation when it's unnecessary and kill your momentum, because they did that before, as you remember.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to be okay in this one at home if everyone back is at 100% that's been injured, dinged up, the whole deal. But this Buffalo team is dangerous as heck. Josh Allen is one sailed pass away from possibly beating New England in New England and possibly winning a division title. His accuracy will have to be at a premium in this one, and you know his legs are going to be involved as well. But I do think Houston gets off the schneid a little bit and finds a way at home.
And then the other game, the Saints, who you've watched a decent amount, as well as the Vikings. Kirk Cousins, the Vikings kind of closed down ranks, tried to get Dalvin Cook healthy down the stretch run here. The Saints were hoping to get one of those bye weeks and certainly to have at least the divisional round of the playoffs at home. It didn't happen for them. We've already talked about the fact that they may have to go on the road in Lambeau, depending on exactly what happens. How do you see that one shaking out?
Well, I just think that the Vikings, as great as they've been on defense, it feels like the window's closing. It feels like they're not quite as dominant as they have been, and they'll need that type of performance going up against Breeze and crew. I just think that's a lot to ask, especially with Cook's uncertainty, Alexander Mattison's uncertainty. They talked a big game. When I say a big game, they talked a confident game before Green Bay about Mike Boone and we can still make it work running it. Not the same without Dalvin Cook being 100%. Not the same without Madison backing him up. I do like New Orleans in that game.
All right, final thing, and appreciate you coming on with us all season long. Will you go up to Jacksonville and watch Tennessee against Indiana?
Oh, I do believe that I'm going to make that trek. I haven't been to a Tennessee bowl game, I believe, since Tennessee-Michigan in the Citrus Bowl.
In your hometown, I mean, in your town of Orlando. Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, I'm going to make that trek on Thursday, and excited and fortunate to make that trek on Thursday. Go up and see our volunteer people and cloak myself in orange and root for the Vols. I can't wait.
I didn't even ask you about this, but I saw you doing it, and I thought it was pretty cool. You and Mike Keith, who is the voice of the Titans but also went to the University of Tennessee, did a signing day special where you talked about everybody who was signed and broke down their overall talent. And, you know, I'm sure the kids loved it because I bet already, and I'm curious if this is true, you get recognized now because of your voice, because of Madden. And I've told you this about my kids. They are blown away if they hear your voice because they're like, oh, my God, that's the voice on Madden. Is that a different world for you now to get recognized? And I'm sure for those 17 and 18-year-old kids, getting their game broken down by the voice of Madden was pretty awesome to them.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for me to be able to do that and help out our school. And you know, Clay, nowadays, signing days, you've got to have something, right? You saw the Muppets from Baylor, right? You saw Notre Dame where they got the families to say what it means about the kids signing. I think we had Legoland stuff, I think, with Kansas State signing, you know. And right on down the line, you have to distinguish yourself in order to do it. And the Tennessee people, you know, Barry Rice and Link Hudson and that crew in the broadcast department, they came up with an incredible plan. And off we went trying to execute it. And, you know, I'm missing some people's names, and I apologize for that. But they did a phenomenal job, and it was fun to be a part of it. But, yeah, you know, when the Madden thing kicks in, I think that helps out a little bit because so many kids, heck, the NFL players are playing it like mad. And anything we can do to help the alma mater, you know, like Bear Bryant said about going back to Bama, when Mama calls, well, Mama called, and I couldn't wait to answer.
Outstanding stuff as always. Have a good offseason. Enjoy that bowl game, and we'll talk again sometime soon.
All right, Clay, take care.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We teased this yesterday, didn't end up getting to it. If you were watching the Kansas City Chiefs game against the LA Chargers and what might have been Philip Rivers' goodbye, you know that suddenly craziness arose as a 17-point favorite, the New England Patriots, found themselves struggling against Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Miami Dolphins. And down the stretch of that game, Chiefs fans suddenly realized, wait a minute, if we beat the Chargers, we're not going to be the 3 seed. We'll be instead the 2 seed and get a bye week. And Kevin Harlan, calling the game, decided that he needed to take it to the next level. And he did. This is what the audio sounded like.
Meanwhile, Miami has first and goal down by 4. And they're at the New England 4-yard line, first and goal. 29 seconds left. Here, Butker kicks the extra point. And Fitzpatrick throws in the end zone. Touchdown, Miami! The Dolphins have just scored. Gesicki, the tight end, got a laser in the back of the end zone on a goal-to-go touchdown pass by Miami quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick to take a lead with 24 seconds to go. The extra point coming up for Miami, leading New England 26-24. And the crowd now knows it. What a throw by by Fitzpatrick. What a touchdown run by Williams on the last weekend of the regular season in the NFL. If the Chiefs win and New England loses, the Chiefs will be the 2 seed. They'll get the bye and they'll have a home game the next weekend.
I'm getting confused. What game are you calling?
I'm calling both games. Here is the extra point. The Dolphins have just gone up on New England 27-24 with 24 seconds to go.
CBS is going to send you 2 checks this week.
I think I'm breaking every FCC rule in the book.
You could hear the crowd getting that knowledge, and it's starting to sweep through Arrowhead Stadium there as Chiefs fans became aware, hey, we've got a chance now to be the overall number 2 seed. And that is that was phenomenal work, first of all, by the way, for Kevin Harlan to be updating everybody who was watching that Chiefs game and cared so much about what was going on with the Dolphins against the Patriots as well. But I also think that is two ships passing in the night. The Chiefs' defense down the stretch, ever since they lost against the Titans, their defense has been the best in the NFL. They have averaged giving up only 11 points per game over, I guess, what is it, the final 6 games of the regular season, I believe, since they lost that one with Patrick Mahomes. I think the Chiefs were 6-4, if I'm not mistaken, and have won their final 6 of the season. And their defense has been a big reason why. And if this is the year that they get over the hump and find their way into the Super Bowl, the defense will be a big reason why. But what I like about this Chiefs team is they have the ability to win a variety of different ways. You know how the team a lot of times that wins the NCAA tournament in college basketball is the one that can win a defensive struggle if they need to lock down and they need to win a game in the 60s, but they can also, if they need to, win a game in the high 80s or the high 90s. I feel like the Chiefs are that team. And I don't know how many teams have that variety. And sometimes you need to have the ability to win multiple ways in order to advance to the Super Bowl and certainly to win a championship. Sometimes your offense is going to be clicking and you need to be able to score 35, 38 points. And I believe the Kansas City Chiefs can do that. And other times your defense needs to be able to lock somebody down and give you a chance to win 17, 14, 20 to 17, something like that. And I believe the Chiefs can do that as well. I think the Ravens can. I think maybe the Titans can, although I'm not 100% sure on that. The Texans, I'm not sure what their high-end offensive explosion is. I don't think the Bills can win multiple ways. And I'm not sure really right now what way that the Patriots can win.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
What you got for me, Danny G?
All right, really quick, Clay, before we get started, Eddie Garcia says he has a quick question for you, Animal Thunderdome related.
Yes.
Clay, did you get something I sent you in the
yes.
mail?
Yes, I did.
Did you try it out?
I have not tried it yet, but you sent me crocodile beef jerky, effectively, right?
Yes, from Australia.
Yeah, no, I was ecstatic to get that. It is on the shelf. I haven't because I've wanted to kind of be able to build an entire segment around my opinion of the crocodile beef jerky.
Do you think your kids will try it?
Probably because I'll tell them that it's crocodile. But they're not like real adventurous eaters right now. They're so young, right? I mean, like, they like grilled cheese and peanut butter and jelly.
And that's
like,
it, yeah.
All
put
the
some
staples.
Ketchup on it.
Yeah, and pizza. Yeah, put some ketchup on it.
All right,
yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And I am excited to try it out.
What a perfect segue, because the first Animal Thunderdome is from Australia.
Of course it is.
Let's go to North Queensland, where a dad is a hero after he saved his 4-year-old son from being attacked by a 15-foot python in their backyard.
This is just why I can't go to Australia. If you can live in a place where pythons can just be hanging out in the backyard, is this an escaped python or is this normal? Like they just live in the trees and stuff in Australia?
Yeah, just normal.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, check out what happened here. Evan Thompson was hosting a housewarming party at his new house in Airlie Beach last Thursday when he heard his son Clifford screaming near their pool. When he ran outside, he found this massive snake latched onto his son's leg.
This is maybe my worst nightmare, by the way. Like, I'm getting chill bumps just even thinking about having to fight a snake off my kids.
Yeah. He was dragging this kid off of their outdoor boardwalk. He told the Courier Mail, "My son was hanging on to the side rail post for his life." And 7 News Australia interviewed the dad, Evan Thompson. This is what the dad said.
He was just holding onto the side of the boardwalk and I was pulling him, literally pulling him under into the bush.
For Dad, Evan, instinct took over.
Punched it straight in the head. At that stage, I let go. It's as soon as I let go, it just curled right back up and went straight and bit him again. So I just grabbed it pretty much his jaw and just bent it back as hard as I could to get it off him.
But the reptile was relentless.
Then I had to run around, grab it on the tail and just pull this thing away from Clifford as it was just constantly just trying to get back at him.
He punched it in the head and then ripped its jaws open. It kept coming after the kid, even while he was doing all of this to the python. The boy was able to run away as Mr. Thompson then killed the snake with a sledgehammer.
Oh. Dad's a hero there, but yeah. I got to be honest with you. If I'm that 4-year-old, I don't know that I ever leave my house again. I mean, how could you ever be safe again in your mind if you're a 4-year-old if a 15-foot snake attacked you? Maybe you think, okay, my dad is there and he'll protect me. And dad is a hero and props to dad. But I don't know that I'd ever go outside again if I was that 4-year-old. When I was 6, I got bitten by a German Shepherd. I was at my friend's house. I had chicken pox, and I was in first grade, I think, and he had a German Shepherd in the backyard, and we went outside to pet his German Shepherd, and the German Shepherd just leapt up and bit me across the face. And at 6, I had to get like 50 stitches, major, you know, like, I mean, just, I mean, you could see my jawbone through my face where the dog bit me. We didn't do anything to the dog. Dog had been in the back. Like, so I don't like dogs. Like, I'm not a dog person because when I was 6, this German Shepherd leapt up and bit me and I didn't do anything to it. So, like, this whole man's best friend thing, I've never been a big dog guy. So we don't have a dog at the house. Like, I'm, you know, perfectly fine not having one because I think dogs oftentimes are untrustworthy. And so... But for years after that, you're apprehensive around big dogs, right? When you're like 5 and 6 years old, dogs are as big as you are, and I don't like that. And so if I had been attacked by a snake at around the same age, I can't even imagine how scary that would be.
Yeah. No, you're right, and I don't think his kid's going to be in the backyard anytime soon.
No, it's traumatic if you're a kid and you have a situation like that.
He's going to be inside on his PlayStation.
And it'll stick with you. Like, I'm not a dog guy for that reason. Like, I was, you know, 5 or 6 years old, and I had to go, you know, obviously have serious surgery, over 50 stitches. When you're 5 years old and the dog bites you and your cheekbone is visible, I mean, it was a nasty, nasty bite that, you know, I had to go in for surgery for. So I'm not, like, going to buy into the idea that dogs are friendly. I never bought into the idea that snakes were friendly, but this poor 4-year-old, there's no way he's dealing with that. What else you got for me?
All right, we might need to get our tiger hunter back because let's go to India. In Uttar Pradesh, there's been another incident with a leopard. This time, a leopard mauled a 65-year-old worker to death. The incident happened last Thursday. Hours after killing this worker, a farmer was also attacked by a big cat in the same spot. According to reports, the leopard attacked this first man that it killed in the middle of a sugarcane field. Authorities there are saying that sugarcane fields have now turned into big cat habitat. Farmers have to risk their lives to work in these fields.
Well, that sounds like an awful gig.
Can you imagine? And the president of this district in India says that they have repeatedly demanded that forest authorities control the number of big cats in the region, but they've had no luck so far.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
6 killings in recent weeks.
Oh, 6.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We're going to get back to the Animal Thunderdome here momentarily. First, biggest sporting event going on last night, Orange Bowl. The Florida Gators outlast the Virginia Cavaliers. Storyline that I would say worth following there. Dan Mullen finishes off season two with the Florida Gators at 11-2. He went 10-3 last year, now is 21-5 in his first two seasons with the Florida Gators. That compares pretty favorably with Steve Spurrier, who was 19-4, and Urban Meyer, who was 22-4. Now, Urban Meyer won a national title in his second year with the Gators, but could Dan Mullen end up as a candidate potentially for the Dallas Cowboy head coaching job based on his relationship with Dak Prescott? Should that Dallas Cowboy head coaching job come available? I think that's certainly possible. And we talked about that some last week with Alex Marvez, but it's worth paying attention to. I was kind of surprised. We have Lockett in later this afternoon, so I'll be doing television. But there are a lot of games because many people are out for New Year's Eve. And many of you out there listening right now, you may be driving back from being away for Christmas, or maybe you're taking off a couple of days for the new year. Maybe you're traveling somewhere for a new year, quick vacation trip. Get a lot of games, but not a great game, I would say, with games going on all day, starting at noon Eastern, Virginia Tech, Kentucky. Then you got Florida State, Arizona State, Navy, Kansas State, Wyoming, Georgia State, and Utah, Texas. Not to say those games are mediocre, but yeah, those games are pretty mediocre. Unless you're a diehard of one of those teams, there's five different games going on today, but I don't think necessarily they're that great. What are you guys doing, by the way, for New Year's Eve? Are you going out? Danny G?
No, I'm going to stay in this year.
So what will you do? Will you watch the ball drop? Like, you're on the West Coast. Will you watch East Coast? Will you stay up till midnight?
Yeah, the girl I'm dating right now, she'll be over. Probably just have some bubbly there at home. And, yeah, watch on TV.
I don't think I'm going to do anything. I'm not going to go out. I don't think we're going to do anything at all. Probably with my kids. I'll probably try and trick them into thinking that the ball is dropped so that they'll go to bed earlier.
Do it on East Coast time for sure.
Yeah, we had a wild night last night. We watched some, all the kids, you know, kids are still out of school. So we watched some like Home Alone takeoff on Netflix with Denise Richards and Danny Glover. One of the most unbelievable collections of talent I've seen in a long time. And so it's like Home Alone except stuck in a school with a little girl. I don't know if anybody else ever watched this movie. But anyway, my kids wanted to watch it. So, but I'm thinking to myself, what has Danny Glover's career come to that he is in a Home Alone takeoff on Netflix from Lethal Weapon to that? And how much do you think they pay Danny Glover to be in a Netflix movie? Like, Danny Glover has a really impressive body of work that's almost entirely, for me, set around Lethal Weapon with Riggs and Murtaugh back in the day. Mel Gibson, Danny Glover. But I can't remember, like, what do you think they pay him to be in a kid's holiday movie like that on Netflix? Does he make $1 million for that movie?
Well, you would hope so.
Right? To play a janitor in a kid's holiday movie? I'm sure it's not very hard work. Has anybody... I feel like maybe I'm the only person who's seen this, and my kids pick every, you know, like, I can't even remember what the name of it is, but Danny Glover and Denise Richards are the only two in the movie that I really recognized. And then there's another guy who I kind of vaguely recognized, and my kids recognized him as being the Ant-Man's friend, I believe, from the Marvel movies, the Hispanic guy. I think he's in it. It's a weird collection, but what does that movie
Michael
cost?
Pena. Michael Pena?
I think Michael Pena. Well, somebody look that up and confirm that all those dudes are in. I can't even remember what the name of it is. Somebody go on Danny Glover's IMDb
page.
Yeah,
and trying to do searches here, it's going so bad for Danny that Donald Glover keeps coming up, who's a bigger star right now.
Well, that makes total sense. Yeah. But Danny Glover's probably, what, 75 years old?
Is he that old?
Yeah, he's 73.
Dang.
Yeah, he's up there. But I'm curious. What was the name of this? Somebody pull up his IMDb page. But I was watching it, and the only thing I could think as I was watching it is, what's he going to get paid? The reason why I bring it up is I bet we end up watching another Netflix movie set around the holidays. So that's what I did on the eve of New Year's Eve, and I bet it's what I'm going to do for New Year's
Christmas
Eve.
Break-In is the name of the
Christmas
movie.
Break-In, yes. I mean, it's Home Alone in a school, effectively. And Danny Glover is playing a janitor at the school. And there's like a 9-year-old girl who is the equivalent of the Macaulay Culkin character back in Home Alone. This is where we need Justin Cooper, former child star, to find out, what does Danny Glover get paid to be in that Netflix movie? What are Danny Glover's most recent credits other than that Christmas Break-In movie?
Taking a look right now.
You want to hear the description of this Christmas Break-In
movie?
Yeah,
I mean, I know because I watched the whole thing, but I'm curious what the description is.
Izzy is an energetic 9-year-old.
That's accurate.
Overscheduled and running late, Izzy's parents can't pick her up on time for the last day of school before Christmas break. A blizzard complicates the matters, but not as much as a pair of bad guys who are freezing in an ice cream truck. The school's janitor is kidnapped by the intruders, and it's up to Izzy to save the day.
I'm fascinated by this entire concept because I think I could write this movie, right? Like, and while I'm doing my 18 other jobs, how much money does Netflix pay to make Christmas Break-In? I would love to see the budget for this entire film. And also know, if you're listening right now and you have kids and you have also watched Christmas Break-In, how many other people have watched this over the holiday? I think it's a new holiday movie. I think it's only been out for a few weeks around the holidays. How many other parents have watched this with their kids? Tweet me if you have seen this. I'm just curious how many of you out there have also seen this. And also, what you think Danny Glover got paid to be in Christmas Break-In. What are you going to do for New Year's Eve, Dub?
Well, I'm not going to be watching Christmas Break-In, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, well, you're single and 25, so your life is a lot better than mine.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to take it easy tonight. I think me and the roommates and a couple other people are going to come over. We're going to fire up the Traeger and watch some football all day today and tomorrow. So I'm pretty excited about this New Year's Eve, New Year's Day football slate we got going on. I know the games today aren't that great, but tomorrow we got some great ones, including my Auburn Tigers and my hated Alabama Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I'm curious about how Auburn and Alabama both will show up on New Year's Day. Because I didn't bet either of these games because I got burned so bad last year for gambling on college bowl games that I'm not betting. I only bet 10 of them, I think, this year. So I had the over last night in the Florida Gator game. I had the team over, so I feel pretty good. But I'm sitting at 4-4 on the games that I've bet so far. And it's almost impossible to gauge who's going to play and who's going to care. By the way, big news. If you're a college football fan, Dylan Moses announced that he's coming back to Alabama. And there's this kind of notion out there that maybe some of these Alabama guys are going to come back because they didn't like the way this season went. I'm not saying necessarily Tua is going to come back, but maybe. I mean, I don't think anybody anticipated Dylan Moses coming back. What about you, Eddie? What are you doing?
Usually my wife's family, they always have big family things, and for New Year's, they usually have that. From what I understand, though, there's the flu is running through everyone. So
Is this true?
Yeah.
Like in your family, or is this a big thing right now in the country?
No. Well, I don't know if it's in the country, but it's going through the family. So basically everyone's been told, unless you know you're 100% healthy, do not show up. And so I think there's going to be like 4 people that might show up. So.
Yeah. I did you get a flu shot?
I did not. My wife did, and she got sick, and I didn't. So
I'm a big flu shot guy. So I am intrigued to see what exactly is going to go on. By the way, I'm trying to look at Danny Glover's.
Yeah. By the way, the budget of that movie, $7 million.
How did they release the budget on stuff like that?
It says, yeah, I'm on the page on the IMDb page. It says budget $7 million estimated.
Yes.
It also got 4.4 stars. Out of 10.
I would say it's about accurate. I mean, so here are Danny Glover's in Jumanji. My kids also saw Jumanji, so they told me that. He's in Strive. He's in The Dead Don't Die, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, Death Race 4 Beyond Anarchy.
Oh, classic.
The Old Man and the Gun.
My dad.
The Christmas Train. He also did another Christmas. Maybe he's just a big Christmas movie guy. Tour de Pharmacy, Cold Case. I mean, what? How does Danny Glover need money so badly that he is doing Christmas Break-In? And I mean, he looks like he's working a lot. The Christmas Train.
Well, Predator 2 was also atrocious.
Generational money. Maybe he's setting things up for his great-grandchildren right now.
But wouldn't you think that he would have made so much money off of the Lethal Weapon franchise that he wouldn't have to work anymore? And maybe he just likes working.
Yeah, maybe he likes working.
But if I'm choosing to work, I don't know if my agent pitches me Christmas Break-In, I think I might strangle him to death. I mean, if you're Danny Glover, I don't know. All right. What else? By the way, do we have what are you doing, Roberto? You got a kid. Are you staying home or are you going out?
I was thinking about going to my cousins. They're having a party over there, but we got a four-year-old at home, so probably going to just stay home.
Yeah, I think I might watch Christmas Break-In again tonight just to make sure I didn't miss any of the plot points from Christmas Break-In the first time I watched it. All right. And by the way, a lot of you blowing me up. A lot of people have seen Christmas Break-In on Netflix. A lot of parents.
Danny Glover's net worth is $40 million.
It seems like he should be worth more.
That's what I was thinking,
too.
I thought it was going to say like $115 or $120, something in that ballpark.
Now, those net worth, what does it say my net worth is? A lot of those net worth stuff, like Rachel Bonetta's net worth was like $10 million. Somebody looked that up and tweeted it to me a while back. So a lot of that stuff is rough approximation, but I would think that Danny Glover would have made so much money back in the day. What did they do, three Lethal Weapons or four?
Four.
Four Lethal Weapons.
In my mind, they only did two.
Yeah.
Because those were the only ones worth
watching. Well, no, Lethal Weapon 3 had Joe Pesci in it, right?
They were all good.
Joe Pesci even got annoying after a while, but the first two I thought were really good.
I mean, they were outstanding, but if you make Lethal Weapon, you should be worth more than $40 million.
By the way, the internet says that your net worth is $3 million.
Yeah, that's low. What about, my wife's going to be mad at me now for saying that. what does it say the net worth is of Mel Gibson?
I'll take a look for you.
As he was on a real good trajectory there for a while, and then things got derailed. What has it been, like 10 years since he got arrested for all the anti-Semitic comments driving drunk somewhere on the Pacific Coast Highway?
$425 million.
All right.
He directed a lot of good movies.
He's made a lot of really good movies, and at the peak of his career, he was making like gobs of money, so he probably got back-end cash and everything else. But would you expect for Mel Gibson to be worth $500 million? And for Danny Glover to be worth $40 million?
Well, he is Riggs, so yeah.
Riggs and Murtaugh. And I know, again, Mel Gibson made Braveheart, and he made that Apocalypto movie, which was actually really, really good.
That was a good movie.
That was a good movie. And he also was involved in, you know, producing and directing and probably all these other different elements. But it's wild to me that Danny Glover would have only made $40 million.
Yeah, it seems low.
All right, what else we got in the Animal Thunderdome?
All right, cue the music, Roberto. Here we go. Oh, yeah, turn that up for us.
Yeah, crank it. I'll start with this one. I thought this was pretty wild. So this is, you hear a lot about bears because there's a lot more bears now than there used to be. Like the population of bears has grown up, but I haven't heard of this happening very often in our own backyard, at least close to where I live. They had a bear spotted roaming around the University of Tennessee school grounds.
Oh, I saw this.
On Sunday. Now, the kids are out for winter break. But, again, the University of Tennessee campus, when they caught up with the bear, he was stuck inside the Tennessee baseball team's stadium. He had somehow gotten trapped inside of the Tennessee baseball stadium on the University of Tennessee campus. It was a 200-pound black bear. They had to tranquilize him, and then they relocated him back out into the wild. That is pretty crazy that you don't expect to be on the University of Tennessee Police Department list. It's like, hey, we got some drunken revelry. We got drunk kids at, you know, a house party that's making too much noise. And, oh, by the way, there's also a bear on the loose. That's not a call you would anticipate getting, I would imagine, at the University of Tennessee.
No.
All right, what else you got?
All right, last Animal Thunderdome story of 2019. You and Eddie Garcia at the end of last hour were talking about crocodile jerky.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we're going to end with a death here. This 53-year-old man in Zimbabwe died after he was devoured by a crocodile at the Tsapawa Dam in the Midlands. He had been fishing with a friend. They're blaming it on the friend because this guy's a buddy. He got his fishing rod stuck. So being the nice guy, last name is Hoko, it says here. Mr. Hoko was trying to retrieve his friend's rod, lost his balance, and fell into the dam. That's when he was attacked by the crocodile. His friend froze, but couldn't do much to assist to fight there with the crocodile.
All right, there's so many questions that I have here. First of all, he lost his footing and fell into the dam.
Yeah.
How far did he fall?
Article does not say.
Because when I hear fell into a dam, I'm thinking, like, that sounds like a big fall. Right? Did we have like a Indiana Jones Temple of Doom scenario here where you fall all the way, you know, like spoiler alert, at the end of Temple of Doom, they're on the side of that like rock wall trying to climb up the rickety ladder that is ripped, and everybody who falls back gets eaten by crocodiles as soon as they land in the water. So is this a scenario where this guy fall? Like, that seems like really bad luck. You understand
bad
what
luck
I'm saying?
Or foul, like, play, right?
Well, yeah, something sounds suspicious here. Like, you fall into like a lake and you immediately get eaten by a crocodile? Like, that's a bad combo. Like, you're trying to help your buddy with his rod and it's stuck, and then you like lose your footing and you fall into a dam, and then you immediately get eaten by a crocodile. It seems like just really bad luck.
And also bad judgment, because this article says that since 2017, locals have been petitioning authorities and the national park there to deal with the crocodiles in that dam. They've been a menace, it says, since 2017.
Yeah, so why would you fish? And crazy idea, if there's a crocodile-infested dam beneath you, maybe don't worry about the fishing rod, or make the guy who got his fishing rod stuck actually go get it undone.
Yeah. Well, in his defense, at the end of this article, it says, because of the drought in Zimbabwe and other challenges, people are forced to do fishing for survival. But even so, I would still survive in some other body of water nearby.
Yeah, totally understand the need to fish for survival. But also, if crocodiles are that close, wouldn't crocodiles be trying to grab the fish that you're catching? And the reason why I bring that up is I've been deep sea fishing once. Once on a real deep sea fishing trip. And I've been out with my kids, and I don't know necessarily that that really counts as deep sea fishing. But the one time I went out with a buddy, we caught a shark, right? You say, how did you catch a shark? Well, we caught a barracuda. And as I'm reeling in the barracuda, this shark comes out of nowhere, eats the barracuda. And so then the shark is hooked because it ate the barracuda that I had already caught, right? So then I reel in this shark and we get it in the boat. I mean, it's pretty crazy to catch a shark, all that stuff, right? But we caught the shark because we caught the other fish. If you're fishing in an area where the crocodile population is that substantial, wouldn't the crocodiles be trying to eat the fish that you're catching? Just a question that I would ask. I'm not a Zimbabwe fisherman expert, but there seems to be a lot of details in this story that we need to unpack.
From the sounds of it here, the crocodiles are looking for a bigger payday than a fish, because in 2017, a similar incident happened. The crocodile at the dam attacked and killed a young girl, and villagers are losing their livestock to the crocodiles.
Yeah, right.
Just so, yeah, stay away from the dam.
No doubt. And also, be glad that you don't have to go fish and fight crocodiles in Zimbabwe.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.